Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. It's a Friday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Busy show. DJ Bianami will be joining us a little bit later. Deontay Johnson will be making his Houston Texans debut. What are realistic expectations for him? Do you want any part of Jimmy Butler in Houston? Do you want any part of Anthony Santander in Houston? I know what all of you are thinking, though. Brian, why are you on with the Blankers 3-6? You were traded. I failed my physical. You're stuck with me.
Yeah, I was.
I'm a dog.
Little disgruntled by that, and then the future considerations got me BMAC back too.
Yeah, it's like when the Rockets traded for Sean Elliott.
Yeah, with Matt Bullard and Robert Horry, and they were really ticked off about it.
I'm Sean Elliott. I failed my physical, so the trade has not happened. I will still be here 3-6, much to everybody's disappointment. The Texans will be playing football on Sunday against Will Levis, by the way. Brian Callahan announced that Will Levis will be getting the start, and when Will Levis plays the Houston Texans, he's a Hall of Famer. Against everybody else, he's a bum, no good bum, can't do nothing right. Against the Texans, he's really stinking good. Not that Sunday matters. But it does lead you to the question, should the starters play or not? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Where do you stand on this, Blankers?
I've been going back and forth on it because I think, you look at Saquon's situation, you look across the league, if there's really not that much to play for, if you really don't have any, great hopes and aspirations of making some kind of a move as it relates to the playoffs, I don't play my significant players. I just don't want to take the risk. And you know that no matter what you think that there is to gain, that you don't want to run the risk of, no matter how slim you think the playoff hopes are of your particular team, without C.J. Stroud, without Nico Collins, without some of your best players, it gets significantly worse than I think the one. I saw 1% chance of winning the Super Bowl for the Texans by one of the prognostication groups. But overall, when I look at it, I just don't find the benefit, except for the fact that this offense is so inconsistent. And I do believe that Deontay Johnson should play a lot. I said that when you and I were talking about that a couple of, whenever they brought him in, like this should be his dress rehearsal and you should get him as many reps as possible. But if that involves C.J. Stroud, then that's a risky proposition to take.
Yeah, like playing Deontay Johnson with Davis Mills does nothing for me.
Right, because of the timing and stuff. Yeah. You're not getting anything.
Maybe it helps him with the routes and knowing the playbook a little bit, but it's not the same as playing with C.J. Stroud. I'm of the opinion that the offense definitely should play. And I mean, we'll get to some D'Amico sound here. He's going to play his starters, at least some. I think the offense should definitely play. And like the 1%, if C.J. gets hurt, it probably goes down to 0. If Mixon gets hurt, it probably goes down to 0. But I wonder if they play really well if it goes up to 2. You know what I mean? I think that they need some positive momentum, more offensively than defensively. Like the defense should be out there for like 1 or 2 series and then get them out of there. Yeah. The offense, I want them leaving the game feeling good. I think I did this earlier on TikTok at Jeremy J. Branham. I think that the offense needs to be treated like a starting pitcher that the manager's trying to get right. And you know this. You were a pitcher in baseball. Like, there's always that time whenever you leave, like, the 5th or 6th inning where you're, like, at 80, 85 pitches, where you could probably go another inning, maybe another batter or two, but the manager's like, you've been struggling. You just pitched a really good game, 6 shutout innings. Let's get you out of here feeling really good about yourself. That way you're confident and you're feeling good going into your next start. I feel like D'Amico Ryans needs to baseball manager a struggling starting pitcher that pitches well and then leaves the game feeling good going into his next start.
Yeah, that's like you have 2 on, 2 out. You got a shutout going. You definitely take him out now, the chances are, you know, he gets out of it, he gets the win, he's happy. If he gives up a hit, then it's a different story because you leave with a bad taste in your mouth. Mm-hmm. I think you're right from the standpoint of, look, all the talk all week from Slowick to everybody else is CJ a little off? What does it take to get CJ back? Is it his footwork? Is it his mechanics? Is it that internal clock? What's going on with CJ? But the thing that worries me in, on a lesser degree, again, like the Saquon instance, is Joe Mixon is 102 or 3 yards away from a $250,000 bonus.
How many?
100? I think it's like 102, 103.
Nah, that's too many.
Yeah, I don't like that. Everybody's like, make sure Joe gets his bonus. How about give it to him and sit him down and say, forget what you have to get. We're going to sit you because the smart move is we know what you can do. We know how important you were because when you were out, it was a different situation with the running game. I don't want to risk it. I'll give you the $250K and sit you down because I don't want you getting hurt.
Yeah, I like. I don't either. Either I just don't care about giving him the bonus because I don't care about his bonus. I care about my team winning games, or I do like what you said and make it right. Or you like tear up the contract next year. Here's your new deal that implements the bonus, although it does kind of mess with the salary cap a little, not too much. But yeah, I don't actually. I think that Joe Mixon's actually unimportant to play. Like I know I just said that I want the offense to go out there and like leave the game feeling good after a series. But if there's one guy I do not want on the field to be Joe Mixon, because I don't think that Joe Mixon needs the reps. I think that Stroud could use the reps. We might see a different offensive line Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there might be a different offensive line. They need the reps. I don't know. I'm curious. Like, of the few things that I'm actually curious about this game, like, obviously there's not a ton of intrigue in this one. I am curious what the offensive line looks like now that Drew Scruggs is healthy. Like, is Drew Scruggs going to be back in the starting lineup? I don't know. Let's find out. Like, that's one of the small intrigues I have about this game. I'm intrigued to see how many snaps the offensive starters and the defensive starters get. And then I'm intrigued by Deontay Johnson. And that's about it.
Yeah, my big thing with the offensive line is that, look, I know Shaq's not going to play because he's nursing the knee and he shouldn't play. But I think that from a lot of the perspective of we've been heard all season long about continuity. Well, continuity comes with the fact that you're back to playing musical chairs, taking guys and having them play multiple positions. You got to figure out what you're going to do for the playoffs, and you have to figure that out before the playoffs start. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important in this game that aside from Shaq, that everybody else, probably maybe Tunsil, everybody else needs to see significant minutes where they're going to and snaps where they're going to be playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, like that to me, that's why it's more important that the offensive line plays. But I think there's a possibility. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I think there's a possibility that Drew Scruggs could be your left guard and Titus Howard could be back at right tackle. Like I think it's in play. I don't know. Like I'm curious to see what they do because I do think that the starting offensive line against Tennessee will be the starting offensive line and whoever you play in the wild card. Because why else would you do that in Week 18?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is Shaq's not going to play, and Tunsil, I could see them not playing.
Maybe.
Yeah, but I think you're right. The internal offensive line, there's so much to be worked out, especially on the left side, that I think that you have to figure that out and they have to play.
Yeah, maybe from left guard over. Like, because maybe Laramie Tunsil is just a healthy scratch because they want to make sure he gets there. But that's how I feel about playing the starters. Here was D'Amico Ryans when he was asked about it throughout the week. D'Amico, resting starters or not? Question mark?
Yeah, going into this game, as I mentioned to all our guys, that everybody has to be ready to go. And that's where we are. Everybody will be out there playing, and we'll see how the game goes. But for us right now, we got to go play better. And our last outing on the field was not good enough, not representative of who we are defensively, offensively. It's not a good representation of our team entirely. So we got to go out. We got to play better football.
I think he's doing whatever I'm telling him to do. I think that he wants to see some good ball from his team, and then okay, go watch the rest of the game from the sidelines.
Yeah, I think that more so than anything else, he's sending the message that there's still a lot to be figured and sorted out in this last game. So we've got to be playing better football, and if you start doing that, that's probably when guys start sitting down. But until then, we got too many kinks to work out to be worried about who needs, you know, unless you have an injury already. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to rest healthy scratch guys when I know that our offense has been so off kilter.
And you can't rest everybody because of the game day roster in the NFL. It's limited to 46, but you're getting your best players off the field. I can see a possibility where you get a 3-and-out defensively and then you take over offensively, go down, march down the field and score and calling it a day. Mm-hmm. I could see that happening too. Now, maybe that's not enough reps for Stroud and Deontay Johnson. Like, it's a very fine line. Here was another one. That was actually DJ Bieniemy's question, D'Amico. Here's D'Amico Ryans a little bit later on the pros and cons of playing guys and what we think is a meaningless game.
Yeah, there is a balance there. But for us right now, I think it's a feel for where your team is at this point of the season. And for me right now, you know, our team needs to be playing better as before we head into the postseason. So, you know, we'll see where we are and how the game goes, and of course, be smart about what we're doing and be intentional about everything that we're doing, knowing what we have ahead of us. But I still want our guys to go out and play good football.
There you go. So, to me, it's he wants them to play a little bit. He wants them to play well, and then he wants to get them out of the game.
Yeah, and I think that that's what he should be doing. As long as you see, like, from a the offensive line's tricky because you want to see the continuity, and no matter what you do, you're not going to see the full continuity because you're going to have one and probably two guys that are going to be there in week one of the playoffs that aren't going to be playing. But I think that the rest of the guys, you got to figure that out. I need Deontay Johnson to get a lot of reps because, and even after CJ's out of the game, he needs to get more because he's still learning the system, running the routes, and understanding where he has to be. So I think he's a guy that needs the full game. When it comes to the defense, they've shown you enough all year that you don't need Will and Autry and Hunter and those guys. You don't need them out there, and Foley won't play. So, yeah, you just need to be your best up. Now, I think from Aziz's standpoint, Aziz needs to play because he's got to get back into it.
Yeah, and I think that's what he's talking about. Like, it's a fine line, you know. Like, there's certain guys that need a few more reps. There's certain guys that might need three. So that's the line that you play. And then you also have to try to factor in the whole rest, avoid injury versus trying to find your form. So it is difficult. Like, I don't envy D'Amico Ryans in this spot because this isn't a team that's clicking on all cylinders. No. This isn't the back-to-back champions. Like, Kansas City, they have a bye and they're resting all of their stars because they're the back-to-back champs. I think they've probably earned that right, deserved that right, and we always feel like they can flip the switch and turn it on. The Texans aren't there, and the Texans have been very mediocre on the offensive side of the ball to where, yeah, I think they do need to find their form to try to get right for the playoffs if there's any hope of winning a game or two in the postseason.
Well, I think the other thing that's key, Jeremy, is when you look at guys with not just the offensive line standpoint, from a continuity standpoint with Aziz playing with Christian Harris, I'm not sure that they've played together all season long. So you'd like to see those guys play alongside one another. They both need the reps anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think those guys are probably going to go longer simply because of that. Whereas if there's any guys that have been dinged up or any guys that that are so significant for you, those guys have the shortest leash. You're going to yank them out as soon as you possibly can. You'd like to win the game, but if you look at most, you know, prognosticators in Vegas and everything else, most people would think you're one and done the way you've been playing. So you got to get right on offense to figure out a way that maybe you can get hot going into the playoffs.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't think that they have a shot, but the coaches can't coach that way.
No.
Like, the coaches are coaching with whatever they can possibly do to try to advance as deep as they possibly can in the postseason. Key from L.A., speaking of Key, he says the Texans have no type of rhythm on offense, too much pressure on the defense, so they need to go out and play. I would agree to that. I would agree with the Key. Have some rivalry, Texans. Don't they want to crush the Titans? Have some rivalry, Texans. I've never heard rivalry used in that way.
Me either.
Like, have some rivalry, Texans? That's a weird way to say that.
I think Dalton Schultz needs to play through overtime.
You just want him to get hurt or what?
No, I don't want him to get hurt. Well, I mean, if that happens, then I don't wish anybody to get hurt, but I just need him to get right so that he plays with a little of fire and intensity and does things on a little different energy level.
Yeah, a lot of people want to get rid of Dalton Schultz. I was looking at his contract the other day. It would cost you money. There's like zero cap savings, actually negative cap savings if you cut Dalton Schultz. Now, you could trade him and save some money. I just don't see a trade partner out there for Dalton Schultz. Texter, do y'all conveniently have $250,000 to lose? They need to go in the playoffs with a W.
The $250,000 comment, this is the NFL. They get checks written to them. They are bathing in money no matter how good or bad you are as a team on the field. That is a drop in the bucket for them to take care of Joe Mixon and make sure he doesn't get hurt.
They have to play him. $250K is something he deserves. Easy for y'all to say. Play him, pay him. Let's go, Joe. Clap emoji, clap emoji, clap emoji. I don't care about pro athletes and their bank accounts. Like, it's so weird to me that fans care when a player, like, makes X amount of dollars or misses an incentive or is chasing an incentive. I don't care if Joe Mixon has plus or minus $250K in his bank account. Maybe that makes me insensitive. Maybe that makes me a jerk. I just do not care.
I think that the other thing is that suddenly there's this sensitivity for a guy that's just made a boatload of money and ended up, thanks to this team reaching out and doing what they didn't have to do with an extension of taking care of him even further, to realize that same team that went out and extended themselves to give you the extension also wants to make sure that you're available to play at the biggest time of the year. So they're going to do something smart and not play you. And if it's $250,000, you don't have to. I'm saying I hope he gets it. I hope the organization finds a way to be able to give it to him even if he doesn't get it. But at the same time, if they just choose to sit him and he doesn't get the $250,000, so be it, because I need him to play when it matters most.
I had a weird thought, a little brainchild earlier today when I was driving in. And I, look, it wouldn't impact our viewpoint of the Texans. It probably wouldn't impact anybody's viewpoint of the Texans for the next 3 months. Like, this is more previewing the 2025 season and getting closer to kickoff in the 2025 season, maybe over the offseason, and more nationally than locally. Because locally, I don't think our opinions are going to change. But do you think there's a difference in how the Texans are viewed nationally going towards 2025? Playoff result is the same if they have 10 wins instead of 9 wins? Like 10-7 Houston Texans that lost in the divisional round versus 9-8 Houston Texans who lost in the divisional round. I feel like, even though it's only one game, I feel like that actually would have a little bit of weight nationally.
No.
Nationally and talk in, like, when we get removed away from the end of the year.
I see your point simply because of the fact that so many of these guys have so many games, they don't watch these teams regularly enough to go, that was a double-digit win team that had a tougher schedule this year. So maybe that gives them a little bit more credence to say, oh, they're going to be on the rise. They're going to continue to play well. But I think that the flip side of that is they spent a lot of time on national TV this year laying eggs. And so a lot of people saw a lot of tape that the realization came, they're not a Super Bowl contender right now, whether they have 9 wins or 10 wins. I think that they've seen a lot late in the year of their worst football.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like some national people that don't watch the Texans that closely would have a slightly different viewpoint if the Texans were 10-7, lost in either wild card or divisional round, versus 9-8 Texans that lost in the same round as compared to the other scenario. I was wondering about that, because like the difference between 9-10 feels more substantial than the difference between like 5-6. Like, I feel like 5-6 are the same thing.
Yeah.
9-10 to me feels like a great divide. Like, if it was 12, 13 wins, I feel like that's kind of the same. Like 13-4 Chiefs, 14-3 Chiefs. Does that matter? I don't think it matters.
It doesn't.
But I think the difference between 9-10, even though it's still one game, is far greater when it comes to like national opinion and casual opinion than the other two alternatives.
Does the division winner title go into that? And if it does, is it a positive or a negative? Because you could be, hey, you won the division, or it could be you won the division as the worst division in football because you only had 9 wins.
See, I kind of went there too, because this conversation kind of reminds me of Bill O'Brien a little bit. Like 9-7 Texans or 10-6 Texans. Like Tim, like I know that now you play 7.
Doesn't matter,
games,
Brian.
But if Bill O'Brien was winning the division title going 10-6 as opposed to 9-7, locally our opinion would have been the same. Mm-hmm. But don't you think nationally it would have been a little bit different?
Maybe.
I feel like the double-digit win is pretty significant versus the single-digit amount of wins.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. I just think that, again, the fact that you could win the division, and regardless of how many wins you have, the way that they've played, and if they're truly limping into the playoffs, and they've seen Christmas, they've seen Monday night, they've seen Sunday night, where they blew the big lead to Detroit, you're like, I don't care if they won the division or not.
Yeah. Is draft position affected? I don't believe so. I believe that draft position, it could be.
Yeah, it could be.
But it's when you're eliminated. The NFL, the playoff teams are sorted in the draft based on their elimination. So, like, every team in the wild card is slotted whenever they're eliminated. Every team that loses in the divisional round gets slotted.
There's no tiebreaks based on
that. That's the thing. That would be the tiebreak. So, like, if the Texans were to lose in the wild card round, there's 3 wild card games in each conference now, right? So that's 6 wild card losers. So I believe that whoever would have the lesser record of those 6 wild cards would have the first pick of all the playoff teams. So I guess it is a little bit affected.
Yeah.
It would be better if the Texans go 9-8.
I wasn't sure how they do tiebreakers with the teams with the same record getting in the playoffs.
Yeah, it would be better, I guess, if the Texans go 9-8 than 10-7. Branham, is it weird that you worry more about how billionaire owners spend money and don't care about player incentives? See, I don't really care about billionaire owners and how they spend money. To me, it's how they spend money and it affects the team. Like, if you're going to spend stupid money, that means it's going to restrict you to be able to spend money later. So that's why I care about owner spending. Like, if they just want to spend a bunch of money to sign every player like the Dodgers, cool. But Jim Crane, whenever he signs Jose Abreu and spends stupid money, that's going to restrict him from signing guys going forward. So that's why I care about billionaire owners spending money versus player incentives. Another texter, it's the texter that was telling us that Mixon needs to play for the $250,000. That's you. We don't care what you care about. Who the F are you? Well, you listen to us every day, so I think you care a little bit. Yeah. I think he cares all the time. He texts all the time. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Should the starters play? We'll talk about Deontay Johnson's realistic expectations later. Some college football talk, too. I'm really enjoying these playoffs. And then Anthony Santander rumors. Is there any legitimacy to it, and does it make any sort of sense? Also, when we return, how much do you care about the rivalry with the Texans? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man, Joel, Brian at Sack, my BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Collectively, we are the Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Texture, you could do an entire segment on just Cam Scataboo and that performance. He's really good. I want him to be a Houston Texan really bad.
Okay, Scataboo. I was going to ask, he's really good on the college level. How do you think that translates to the NFL?
Is he
an every down back?
I don't know. I didn't watch him close enough to know how well of a pass catcher he is. Although he did have that great pass, he had that great catch on the sideline whenever he got away with a little OPI. Just
Texas won the game, so I'm not going to harp on it. But he definitely shoved off on that play.
Yeah, he shoved off a little bit. I don't think that anybody in the NFL is really an every down guy anymore. Like Derrick Henry, great year. He doesn't really play much third down. Maybe Saquon Barkley's everyday guy or every down guy. Probably Christian McCaffrey.
Kyron Williams.
Yeah, there's end of list.
It might be.
Three to five.
There's a handful. There's not nearly as many as there used to be when you had bell cow tailback.
Oh, Bijan, of course.
Bijan. Yeah, but even he gets rested with Tyler Allgeier. Like, that's why it annoys me that the Texans have Joe Mixon end of conversation.
Josh Jacobs, he's majority, like you said, but they do what we were hoping that they would do with Mixon when he was healthy, which is at least one series a half, he sits out.
Yeah, so maybe five running backs are just every down backs. That's why I'm annoyed that maybe even Joe Mixon is out of necessity, although we do see a lot of Darray. It's not a great third down back, but he plays on third downs. That's why it annoys me about them. But I think that he has a spot in the league. I really do. Now,
no, there's a difference. Yeah, I think he definitely has a spot in the league because his lower half, he moves regardless of whether the lineman helped him get in the end zone or not. Mm-hmm. He moves after first contact. He can move defensive linemen. He is strong.
Yeah.
But is he more of a situational or I saw I forget who it was, if it was Saban or Belichick or something. Well, he's a special teamer in the NFL because he does all these different things. I don't think he's just a special teamer, but I don't think he's a feature in an offense.
I don't know. What does he lack?
He's short.
So?
Running backs are always short.
I understand, but he's also, I don't think his quick twitch and his side to side, I think he's more of a kind of like get the ball full steam ahead. Yeah.
He shows somewhat. Now, I agree with you that he's not like super shifty, like breaking guys' ankles, but he shows really good ability for kind of the one cut and go. I wouldn't say he's just a straight ahead runner. He shows a lot of like a zone concept if he gets in the right scheme, some one cut ability.
Yeah, I think Lance had him like as a third or fourth rounder, but like third or fourth rounder is eventually a starter in the NFL. Like if you're drafting a running back in the third or fourth round, you think that guy will eventually start for you?
Yeah, like you said. If he's here in this scenario, if he's backing up Mixon and you can use him in a variety of different ways, I think that he could be used as a situational weapon. I think he could be hold his own as a series here, series there for Mixon better than what they have. But do I see him being like a focal point weapon in an offense in the NFL? That's a different conversation. I wonder. So.
Like he's not McCaffrey,
right?
I don't think he's a superstar running back because like. Most superstar running backs are drafted in the first round.
Right.
Like, the most recent first-round running backs that we see. Was there anybody drafted in the first round last year? Yeah, Gibbs is a guy. Hey, Gibbs is even an every-down guy because he shares time with David Montgomery. But Bijan Robinson was a first-round guy.
Gibbs and Bijan, same year.
The kid from Pittsburgh from Alabama a couple years ago was the
Najee.
Najee was a first-round pick.
Late first.
And we all think that Jinsy will be a first-round pick.
Probably.
I think he'll be a late first.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams that, I've heard late first to middle first.
Was there anybody drafted in the first round last year?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head because the
stars.
No.
The stars in that class were all wide receivers.
Gibbs was the same year as Will Anderson.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So
no, because the first running back off the board was Jonathan Brooks from Texas that went to Carolina in the second round. Who has played what one game?
He tore his ACL again.
The same ACL again. Yeah.
I mean, that might be.
Might be a wrap.
I don't want to say career ending, but
I'm
same knee. That's same the bad knee. Thing.
Like probably never going to be what anybody thought he was going to be.
It sucks.
Might be a good case study to not draft injured running backs early. Yeah. Like we already have the notion of not drafting running backs, but maybe the added notion now of avoid injured running backs, no matter how good they are. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like if you want to take that project in the fourth, okay.
Sure.
But wait, like using a second round pick on a running back and then he's also injured and won't be playing to the halfway point of his first year of a 4-year contract might not be a great idea, Carolina.
Yeah, that wasn't a great running back class. You had Brooks was hurt. I believe the second running back was Trey Benson from Florida State.
Second
went to
pick
Arizona
in the third round.
Yeah, it was not a great running back class.
Blake Corum
last year.
Was the next one. Marshawn Lloyd from USC.
Yeah, went
who's
to
a Packer is the next one. Jalen Wright, fourth round. I actually like Jalen Wright. The best running back in this draft was drafted with pick 125. Bucky Irving.
Yeah, that's right.
He's been great.
Best running back pick in the whole draft was pick 125 in the fourth round. That's actually what I want the Texans to do. This makes me sick. I wish I wouldn't have seen this. Bucky Irving was drafted two picks after Cade Stover.
Oh, boy.
I just made myself a little sick.
Yeah, no matter what you like about Cade Stover.
Just made myself a little sick.
That one's a
mistake. Let's go to break. That's gross. 713-780-3776. This is why we should stick to what we're supposed to talk about. Why are we having... I don't even know what I'm talking about. The Houston Texans, Tennessee Titans. They're playing on Sunday. Is this a rivalry that you actually still care about? What is this?
I haven't had many chances to use it.
Titans
drop.
Cheers. Set them
boys to tighten up.
That's brutal. That's worse than the Indianapolis Colts guy.
Go Colts!
That one's better than the Titans. Who was that? Malibu Slim?
Malibu Slim? No, I have no idea. It was the day when we found
Nashville
the Colts
hot.
Thing. We played bad stuff from all the teams of the division. Bad fan
like
stuff.
The Wangs.
I'm not sure I'm going to be the same the rest of the show after seeing that Bucky Irving was just a few picks behind Cade Stover. I don't feel good. I'm instantly depressed. How much do you care about the...
never... quit.
Did that help?
No.
Okay. Well,
no.
I tried.
No. I would have liked to hear, let's draft Bucky. All right, how much do you care about the rivalry with the Titans these days? Is it old hat? Is it an antiquated thing? It is fun to win. Maybe not Sunday, though. How much do you care about the rivalry with the Titans? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
6181, Epic Radio is off the cusp. We're going to do more of that in 2025. Just kind of go with the flow, see where it takes us. I'm still sick a little bit.
In the back of your mouth a little bit.
I did. Yeah. Gibbs was drafted last year. He was drafted 2 years ago. He was in the same draft class as Will Anderson and CJ Stroud. He went 12th.
So it's a second draft last year.
I mean, that was two drafts ago, though.
This is 10 days.
Technically you're right. Yeah. You did lawyer me. You're right. It was 2023. Oh, no, it was 2 years ago. This is 2025.
That's true.
I just lawyered you. It's 25. It was 2023 draft. That's
Let's
2 years
this conversation
ago.
Conversation last week.
Well, yeah, that changes things. Yeah. It's not last week.
Still, it's
that was 2 years ago.
The last draft.
It was not the last draft.
The last draft was in 2024. No, okay. He got drafted in 2023.
This is his second year in the league.
Yeah. But he's not a rookie, so it wasn't the last draft.
It wasn't the last draft.
Potato, potato.
We'll argue about anything. Yeah. Scatabu equals Toby Gerhart. Nah, that's not fair.
No, see,
Scatabu's too slow.
I've heard Peyton Hillis. I've heard.
See, that's just, I think, that's just lazy, though. Just,
I think it's Maurice Jones-Drew.
White guy.
I go Maurice Jones-Drew.
Behannon on Twitch.
I thought Mark Ingram.
He stole my take. I said that yesterday.
Well, but my thing is that I think I could see body type-wise he could be MJD, but I don't think in terms of, like, quick twitch and cutting that he's as quick as MJD was sneaky quick. In
he
the
was
way,
sneaky yeah. quick. I see more I Mark Ingram. I see more Mark Ingram than Scatabu. Because they're both big, bulky guys who aren't burners, but have that one one cut and then acceleration, but aren't long-distance burners.
I just really want a running back in the middle rounds. So if it's Scatabu, great. If it's another guy Nick Cassero likes, great. I just want a running back desperately.
I'll tell you what.
In the middle
of
the draft.
He would slide it all, but Genty would be a guy that would fit really, really
well. Would you draft
here.
Him with your first round pick?
In the 20s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might. If well, you need offensive line so badly, you got to address that first.
I just, but I don't
trust them drafting offensive lineman in the first
round. I don't
round.
Want an offensive lineman in the first round. I want him to
running back
sign
in the first
him.
Round is risky, but at the same time, he's probably the best running back in the draft by a good margin.
If they drafted Genty, I wouldn't be banging the table for it. But if he's on the board when the Texans are on the clock, I might change my mind in the moment.
Because he's got the quick twitch, and he's still got that lower half where he can bust tackles, and he's strong.
You're a big fan of the lower half.
It's impressive when you get run into a defensive tackle or two, and you can still get 2-3 yards after first contact. I think that's good. Impressive.
And people are like, oh, he didn't play well against Penn State. Well, he had 100 yards. You know how many times Penn State's given up 100 yards to a rusher this year?
Rushing.
Once.
Yeah.
Genty was only the second 100-yard rusher against Penn State this year.
30 carries.
He can't run against a P4 team. Okay, he ran for 190 against Oregon.
Yeah, he did.
So.
And there was a couple, someone tweeted the video of – he hit three different Penn State linemen. First contact was behind the line of scrimmage and still got like 7 or 8 yards on one of the carries against Penn State. Going, that's tough to do against anybody, especially when your momentum stopped from the first contact. He hit three different guys and still, like a pinball, got 7 or 8 yards. You're like, he can play.
Yeah, he can. He's a ball player. All right, how do you feel about this rivalry? Texans, Titans are going to wear their throwback Oiler uniforms. They tweeted like, oh, this is our logo, all this stuff. Of course, you always have the ownership stuff. You were telling me about this, the piece that you saw from the Tennessee Titans where like it combined like Bud Adams and Floyd Reese. And actually, it wasn't Bud Adams. Just Floyd Reese and Jeff Fisher talking about the draft where they selected Vince Young, and Bud Adams was so desperate for Vince Young. I think out of spite, because he wanted Houstonian to be his quarterback. But and we know the history. Bud Adams leaving Houston, Titans, blah, 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 blah. How much do you care about this rivalry now?
I think that it goes to some of the quote-unquote rivalries where when you're the better team now, you don't worry about it as much as the lesser team trying to, like, stay relevant. It's not as bad as Yankees-Astros when the Astros just own the Yankees so many times. It's like, well, they consider us a rival, but we have bigger rivals, teams that, you know, we play for bigger things with. But I think that from the standpoint of the Texans, I don't consider it much of a rivalry because, you know, their rivals are good teams. That the Ravens are a big rival for them right now because they got to get over the hump and beat the Ravens. I don't think the Ravens consider the Texans a rival as they would, you know, their own division. So I think from the scale of like how as a Texans fan do I view the quote unquote rivalry? Not much.
I think I'm over it.
Yeah,
I think I'm over the whole Titans, Texans, the Oiler, like the wrinkle of the Oiler logo every now and then. The Texans going with the H-Town blue, whatever they're calling it, but they're not really having the Houston blue. It's more of an accent color, and they're selling a little bit of merch. They also haven't really been competitive at the same time.
Right.
So I think that takes away from like a rivalry. Like you mentioned Astros-Yankees. Like that was hated, and they were playing some games with some high stakes. Astros-Dodgers had the drama of the sign stealing and the players chirping at each other, and they met in a World Series. Joe Kelly, Carlos Correa. Like those had like real moments. Texans-Titans. What moment has there been in that rivalry, other than like Vince Young running into the tunnel in overtime way back in the day?
Stands, yeah.
What is the biggest Texans-Titan rivalry moment? Finnegan-Andre Johnson, maybe back in the day. But like, has there been anything in the last 10 years that screams, there's the rivalry moment? I'm over it. I don't think it's a rivalry
it's
anymore.
It's just the off-the-field
yeah,
stuff.
It's the pettiness
it's just the bickering
between
and, right.
Miss Adams and Hannah.
Yeah, Skunky and Hannah get into it quite a bit. But other than that, it's not anything that's been on the field. And I think the other thing that I was thinking about in this whole question about what kind of rivalry it is like if you're a team if you're a, city scorned, or you are a team like you, you know, from the Houston perspective, the minute that the Titans left, it was tough to take. The minute you got the Texans, the shift was, we got a team again. We'll be just fine. And like you said, they weren't competitive at the same time. But you look at other teams where the city loses a team, Baltimore got another team, they don't still worry about their ex-girlfriend. They're not still worried and this kind of bitter and posting and doing these things to get back at the Colts. The teams that have left and gotten another team, they move on. It's like we're moving forward. But the Titans don't seem to be able to do that, as every time they get a chance to throw the Derek logo and the uniforms and everything at the Texans, they think they're doing something.
And I feel like there's more pettiness than like disdain between the players and the organization.
Amy Skunk, yeah. After the win earlier this year.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't feel like a rivalry anymore. No, it doesn't.
Just, I think you guys nailed it. I think it's just a rivalry between the owners, but I don't know. I think last year weirdly kind of ended it for me, where like there was a little bit of newness with the, hey, we're going to wear the Oilers logo against you, and Mike Vrabel's coming out with Bum Phillips hat. And it was kind of shoved in your face, and the Texans weren't even starting their actual starting quarterback. Case Keenum had to start the game, and the Texans went in there and took care of business and won the game. And I don't know if it kind of felt like it ended the Titans thing for me. I mean, they left in 96. I mean, all our part-timers, our interns, they weren't even alive when that happened. It just doesn't – I don't know. I've kind of moved on to who are you facing each year that feels like you're actually facing for – with the division on the line. And that's been the Colts over the last five to ten years.
Maybe even the Jags a little bit.
The Jaguars were a rival early in the franchise. I would say early, like first 10 years of the franchise, the Jaguars were a much more heated rival than the Titans. I don't feel like the Titans, at least for me as a fan, has the steam that it does for the two owners.
And I love rivalries. I like to conjure up rivalries. I like to conjure up drama. I can't do it with this one. Like, to me, it just doesn't have the storyline other than ownership pettiness.
Colts is their biggest rival right now,
like,
for sure.
Rivalry, the Bills might have a gripe with us, says a texter into the Hive. The Bills don't care about the Bills don't care about the Texans. The Houston football fans might hate the Bills for what happened in the early 90s, but even that was...
The Bills' 35 years rival ago. Right now is the Chiefs, because they got to get over the hump and beat them when it matters the most.
And that's a division that has a lot of like history, you know.
The division does too, yes. But I'm just saying, from recent history, from a Bills team that's trying to get to their ultimate goal and have been close so many times, it's Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah, like there are some legit divisional rivalries in the NFL: Bears, Packers, AFC North with Hard Knocks right now. You look at the AFC South; no one has tons of history. Like the Colts have been around for a while as an NFL organization. But the Jags are relatively new to the rest of the NFL. The Texans are relatively new to the rest of the NFL. And the Titans moved cities in recent memory, or at least we all remember it. So, they don't have those long, sustained hatred between the cities as some of the other divisions do.
The Colts, before they realigned to the four divisions, weren't they in the East?
I think so.
So, I mean, that's part of it. You have three teams that were founded in the 90s or the 2000s.
I'm
pretty sure they were.
They were in the East?
I think maybe this is going back to when there was two divisions. So I think at one point the Colts were in the AFC East.
Didn't used to be the East, Central, and the West?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were in the East.
Because they weren't, because the Central was the Bengals, the Steelers. Yeah, because they wouldn't
Oilers
have been
were in the Central also.
They wouldn't have been in the Central.
I don't think so.
They had to have been in the East. East. Yeah. So they weren't in the West,
right?
Which
goes to the point of this division has no history, because the Jaguars and the Titans were founded in the 90s, the Texans in 2002, and your fourth team is a team who wasn't even in this division until they redid everything in 2002 when the Texans came in.
Yeah.
The division has no history before the Texans.
It really doesn't.
The big divisionals are the both conferences North and the
NFC East.
NFC East,
for sure.
It's weird to think that the Colts were in the East. It just doesn't feel right.
No, it doesn't. It
doesn't feel right. But, yeah, they just don't have the hatred of some of these other divisions. It feels like a rival being forced upon us by Tennessee. If they weren't doing everything with the Houston Oilers, I think I would care very little about them, says a texter. Yeah, it feels almost desperate.
They're absolutely irrelevant at this time of the year, and then they have to do these kind of things, grasping at straws, saying, hey, look, new profile pic, and it's the Love You Blue with the logo of the Derek.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You are thirsty as hell trying to stay relevant.
Our rival is expectations, says a texture. Not doing very well against that. Another texture, Colts area, bigger rival game than the Titans. I would agree. Colts, are, to me, are a bigger rival than the Titans. Brandon T, I don't give a dang about the Tennessee Titans rivalry. Titans aren't relevant and haven't been for a while. Just another game to me. They were relevant with Vrabel, but the Texans weren't relevant then. Ravens and Colts success winning Super Bowls and having guys like Manning and Ray Lewis have helped them move forward. Yeah, I don't really understand how that's relevant.
I think that once you get another team after in that regard, you get another team and you just move on. You turn the page and you're like, I can't worry about things I can't change in the past, but I got a new squad to root for and I still have football in my town.
TJ on Twitter, hearing that Amy cried after the game ball and hearing Titans players saying it meant a lot to her makes me hate them even more. Another texture or tweeter, don't care about it. Pablo, I don't care about the rivalry. I just want the Houston Oilers back. I'm even over that. I love the nostalgia of the Oilers. Yeah. Love the Houston Oilers. I don't think I want the IP back. I really don't. I've moved on from that too. Like, I love the colors and I'll wear the colors, but I don't need the Houston pro team to call the Oilers.
We want to see the ketchup and mustard back with the Rockets from nostalgia and winning the championships and those heydays. But that's the only thing. I mean, and you didn't have to change the name. At the same time, yes, is it fitting that all the history, the retired numbers, and the uniform, if they so choose to wear their quote-unquote city edition version of a uniform, should be in Houston? Yes. That's it. I don't need a name change. I don't need to go back in time because the Texans are moving forward now, and now that they're not a cellar dweller, you see the light at the end of the tunnel.
All right, Houston, jump on board with us. We no longer care about this rivalry that the Titans are trying to force upon us. We're all moving on. All right, 713-780-3776. I'd say that year one of the college football playoff has been a major success for a variety of reasons, and then also I think this is the first year in a long time that the SEC is not the best conference in college football. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
How do we feel that the first season of the college football playoff is gone? You good with the way things have... Yeah, I like it overall. I think there are a few things that they could change up, some small tweaks to the college football playoff. And look, the seeding's a big hot topic, but do you know that the 5, 6, 7, 8 seeds are all that's left? The top 4 seeds are gone. And yes, they had the weird scheduling quirk, but even if you went college football, like rankings, the College Football Committee, their final 4 rankings, they had Oregon, Georgia, Texas, and Penn State. So if you would have went old school, College Football Playoff Committee decides the 4 teams that make it, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Penn State, half of those teams have been eliminated.
Yeah.
Half of those teams have been eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, as we've talked about previously, the fact that there's been so much parity throughout college football, there hasn't been the one or two dominant teams that you just know and expect are going to be the final two standing and one of them's going to win it all, has done everything to even fuel the fire of people clamoring for 16 teams. And, you know, the fact that they should extend it even further because it has been enjoyable. And we were just talking during the break, except for the meaningful playoff games, it's really hard to even pay attention, know, or care about the other bowl games going on because you've added significance to so many more games, whether they're a bowl, you know, whichever their bowl affiliation is or not, as it relates to the playoffs, as opposed to so many bowl games, you just go, eh, it doesn't matter because they're not one of the 4 teams that are competing for a national championship.
I don't know. I'm glued right now to the ServPro First Responders Bowl, Texas State, North Texas.
We're watching the Century. In here.
Yeah. We're watching golf.
Not going to catch me that. First Responders Bowl, baby.
If you went just strictly based on the college football playoff rankings from the committee, the 3-team, the 4-team, the 5-team, and the 6-team are the final 4 teams, which is like, okay, the 12-team playoff made some sense then because you have 2 teams that are in the semifinals that would not have been in the former playoff. And look, there could be some tweaks. I don't mind the whole like change, just do the seeding based on the rankings and only guarantee that the conference champion gets a seat at the table. I think that they probably need to do something with these bye teams getting 3 weeks off. Like, they all lost.
Yeah.
Every team that had a bye lost. Every single one of them. All of them. Arizona State, Oregon, Boise, Georgia, all of them lost. And you had Kirby Smart.
A lot of them
look bad. Yeah, Kirby Smart's out there running his mouth.
They look bad.
Kirby Smart's out there running his mouth after yesterday's game. Like, he was asked about this. The Buys all losing, all four of them. He said, well, there was two teams that were better than the other two. Well, was yours one of them? Because you might have looked worse than all of them. Because, look, Oregon was the top team in the country. Arizona State went to overtime, double overtime with Texas, and was a fourth and whatever away from winning that game. And Boise was right there in it in the fourth quarter until they missed the field goal, and then Penn State kind of ran away with it late. I also have a secondary opinion of what we've seen so far, really throughout the whole season, but then especially with this playoff and even in the bowl season, that has cemented another take for me. I think without doubt that the Big Ten is better than the SEC this year. Without doubt. And it's the first time in a while that I feel like the SEC is not the best conference in football. I believe that the Big Ten has three teams better than the top SEC team. I think Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State are better than the best SEC team. And yes, Oregon got beat by Ohio State, but you have two Big Ten teams left in the semifinals. You have one SEC team, Texas, who almost lost to the weak Big 12 champion in double overtime.
See, but I think there's a different way of looking at this. I understand that you can say from the cream of the crop and the very top of the conference that you could say the top of the Big Ten was better than the top of the SEC. But I think from top to bottom, when you compare the teams and you compare the ranked teams and you compare where they finished, I think it's a good discussion to have because, yes, Indiana was there as well. But you can look at the fact that, you know, Ole Miss had a great season. And you can have, you know, all the SEC was still very, very strong. And the bottom of the Big Ten, and it got deeper in terms of, you know, Wisconsin was terrible. Michigan State wasn't anything close to what they used to be. And a lot of the Big Ten teams have fallen off. And you add an SC and you add a UCLA to the point where, yeah, there's arguments to be made. But I think it's a better discussion where you could have either side of it if you look at the entire conference as opposed to just who finished where at the top.
Never said the SEC was bad. I do think that the SEC is a really good conference. I'm saying they're not the best conference this year for the first time in a while. And don't sleep on Mississippi State being a really bad football team either.
True.
Like, you want to throw out the bottom of the Big Ten, which is bad. Admittedly, it's not very good. But Mississippi State wasn't very good. Mississippi State was 2-10 on the year. Kentucky wasn't very good. They had one upset win. They were 4-8. They were not very good. And you talk about, like, the middle of the pack and all of that. Well, let's go through it. Big Ten versus SEC this year. This year, they have met up a combined 8 times. Ohio State hammered Tennessee. Let's consider the margin of victory here. Ohio State hammered Tennessee, who many people thought were a national title contender. They go into the Big House, they get drummed 42-17. Okay, there's just one result. How about when big, mighty Alabama faced Michigan? How did that one turn out? Michigan beat Alabama. Michigan was the 7th best team in the Big Ten. They were 5-4 in the Big Ten. They were 7th best. They beat Alabama, who a lot of people, including me, were saying they should have been in the playoff, who tied for 4th in the SEC. So there's an advantage to the middle of the Big Ten over the middle of the SEC. Illinois beat South Carolina, who a lot of people were saying, well, they should have been the team that was in the playoff, not Alabama. They beat Clemson. They should have been it. Well, Illinois beat South Carolina. Well, it's a bowl game. Who cares? NIL, transfer portal. Well, that affects everybody. And Jalen Milroe played for Alabama. Sellers played for South Carolina. They had their starting quarterbacks. But let's go beyond that. How about USC beating A&M in the Vegas Bowl? There's another Big Ten over SEC. Well, how about regular season? USC beat LSU. 5 Big Ten wins over the SEC. The SEC does have 3 against the Big Ten. Missouri, a favorite, squeaked by Iowa, needed a come-from-behind victory to do that. Texas did beat Michigan early in the year, and LSU beat UCLA. How is the SEC better than the Big Ten?
No, this year, I mean, you can look at it. I think that there's two ways of looking at it. If you look at it just from the cream of the crop, it's one thing. But if you look at the totality and when you go through the games like that, then you can see that it's much more of a competitive balance and a discussion to where you can give the advantage to the Big Ten for 1 year. Now, over the longevity of, you know, prior or going forward, that'll be a different story, I think. But overall, the Big Ten showed out because Illinois wasn't supposed to be this good. No one knew Indiana was going to end up being a playoff team. I mean, they have their top two. Their top 4 or 5 teams. But yeah, it's definitely a discussion this year for sure. And the Big Ten should, you know, for most people, get the nod.
I was arguing with my acquaintances yesterday, and they're like, "Well, it is half of them, SEC's better." How? Based on what? History, straw man fallacies? Like, how is the SEC better? And Texas, look, Texas can maybe change this conversation. If they beat Ohio State, where they are a heavy dog, another advantage to the Big Ten over the SEC, because Texas, you know, Big 12 team from a year ago carrying the water of the SEC, they're dogs in this game. So, like, Texas can throw a wrinkle into this. But if Ohio State drums Texas, and maybe you're looking at a Big Ten, all Big Ten final.
If you get an all Big Ten final, Paul Feinbaum's going to have to eat a whole lot of crow.
Not even arguable. Or even if it's Ohio State, Notre Dame.
That's,
how can
that's
you
the final I expect.
And how could, but how could you argue if that's the final, that the SEC is better than the Big Ten this year?
Because there's no SEC team. It's Notre Dame.
I just don't get how the SEC this year is better than the Big Ten. This year specifically.
I push back on some of your argument overall, maybe the bowl game aspect, because I get it, the NIL and the transfer portal is the same for both teams. I just don't know, and I don't think we can know the motivations of every player on the field.
Even if you eliminate the bowl games that aren't in the playoffs, the Big Ten's 3-2 against the SEC.
Because overall, I still agree with you. Like, I don't or like 22. Using the bowl game argument, but I still agree with you overall. It's not been a banner year for the SEC. Right. I mean, the SEC at the very top with Georgia and Texas, as much as I don't want to admit it, is flawed in that they don't always play their A game very often. In Georgia, through losing guys in the draft on defense and obviously injuries on offense and wide receivers that can't catch for some reason, is not a classic Georgia team. So at the very top, those two teams are flawed, and then it trickles all the way down. I don't think it's been definitely not an A-plus year for the SEC.
No, it's a down year for the SEC. Like, I admit that. Like, do I think the SEC will be the best conference next year? Yeah, I do. Like, I think they'll be right back there next year. But this year, I can't see anything that is actually tangible that tells me the SEC is better. Texter Casual Branham points at a couple bowl games where the SEC school is clearly not motivated to play in. I always hate that these strawmans from the SEC, oh, well, you can't look at bowl games, they don't matter. But then when they win a bowl game, oh, they matter. What? Like, Alabama had Milroe playing. South Carolina had Sellers playing. Why can't I use those bowl games? But let's eliminate those meaningless bowl games. How did Tennessee do in the Big House? How did LSU do against USC earlier this year? Because the only two SEC wins over Big Ten schools in non-bowl games, because we can't use that according to this texter, were Texas, who beat Michigan then beat Alabama in a bowl game, and then LSU beating measly old UCLA. Like, the Big Ten wins over the SEC are far greater than the SEC wins over the Big Ten, even texture, when we eliminate your meaningless bowl games where the SEC teams had their starting quarterbacks.
Look, I'm a Big Ten guy, but I didn't expect this. I think that to look at this and say from the totality of conferences over a 3-year, 5-year span or going forward, it might be a different story. You've got to give the Big Ten their flowers this year, because I did not see Illinois and Indiana having the seasons that they have had. I did not see Penn State staying in there, but their quarterback play was raised to a different level. They got an all-world tight end, and you know, they won the games when it mattered, when people were saying, who have you played? The Big Ten this year deserves all of the recognition and flowers of the top two conferences. They're the better conference.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. There are rumors out there about Anthony Santander joining the Astros. How much do we believe in this, and how much do you want him to be in Astros? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.